Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And once again, I am Martin, and I am joined by, well, he's the king of the casters. He's the chief defender of the faith. He is the best booker in the business. He's Mr. Brett Podcast. There you go. Brett, enough about you, really, honestly. You take up too much time talking about yourself.
Well, if you want to talk about a person that we could take up too much time talking about, just the work that he's done with all the people that he's done it with, it's our guest today. He currently plays with Whitesnake. He tours with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. He tours with Cher. And currently he's on to promote his Joel Hoekstra's 13 new album, Running Games. He is Joel Hoekstra. And thank you so much for coming on, Joel.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, you know, you're an amazing guitarist, and you may not have heard that before, but we really appreciate your guitar. And Running Games is coming out February 12th. Tell us about it. And of course, I understand why there was a gap between albums, because you did about 8 million things in the meantime.
Yeah, that's part of it. It took a while to find a business deal that made sense for doing another one too. So, but yeah, being busy touring, definitely. I mean, 2019, I was on the road 285 days that year. So I think it took a pandemic to finally finish this. But I'm super excited to have it see the light of day. It allowed me to finish it up, but a lot of the other guys too. I mean, everybody in the involved with the project, all the musicians have very full schedules. So it's not just me, it's everybody else. So yeah, it did help us finally get down to the, like, hey, we can actually get this done, get it mixed, get it out. So very, very excited to have it out and really proud of it.
Well, I mean, there's no question. The band by itself. I mean, when you talk about Russell Allen singing, I mean, Vinnie Appice, Tony Franklin, one of my all-time favorite bass players. I mean, Derek Sherinian, and of course, one of our favorite people, Jeff Scott Soto, doing background vocals. I mean, to be able to put that band together is amazing.
Yeah, so those are all the same musicians that were on Dying to Live. So I'm excited that I get to have everybody back, because it gives the moniker, Joel Hoekstra's 13, a sound that people can expect. So now I think now is when people start to finally get, like, oh, so I get it. This is the style of, like, this name and this project, right, that I'm going for, which I just think is just good old-fashioned classic rock, you know, late 70s, 80s. And Dio-ish at its heaviest, Foreigner-ish at its lightest. So very much like melodic hard rock, but it gets kind of heavy at times too.
Now, how long have the songs themselves been written and ready to go?
So I would say, as far as finishing the lyrics and everything, so I basically write in two chunks, where I'll write the melodies and the guitar riffs, right? And then that's what kind of goes off to Vinny. But then a lot of the lyrics have to be filled in. I'm just kind of have written a melody that will be sung. So the lyrics got written once I had everybody's tracks, the rhythm tracks. I had the drums and bass, I would say the end of 2018. So that took a little bit of time too, just to, like, have me lay down all the songs, which is, there's 13 tracks total with the bonus tracks. So to have me lay those down and get Vinny on all of them, and have Tony Franklin on all of them, and get them back, and then finally write the lyrics to them. I would say that was end of 2018. Yeah.
So do you write a lot when you're on the tours and that type of thing, or is it more, okay, I'm done that one project, let's focus on this one, and that's when you do your writing is in your whatever spare time you have.
Well, I do it when I set my mind to it. So if it's like, look, this, I have to write that in this time period, so that's when it gets done. But there was no point in me doing it, I think, when it was kind of like, you know, I don't know that I'm going to get a business deal done for this, you know. And then finally, I just take the attitude, just do it. Just make the album and, like, put it out in one way or another, you know, even if I had to just give it away on the street. just make it, you know, because – at the end of the day, that's these albums for me. That's what they're about. The opportunity to, I guess, just be the boss for like a minute. You know, get to write everything is really fun. To be able to write the riffs and the lyrics, and be in charge of the mix and the production, so to speak, like what, you know, how it's going to be mixed, how it's going to sound. So that's a cool feeling when you're usually part of like a very, very democratic process being in a band. And so anyway, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not happy in democratic processes as well. I am, but it's just fun every once in a while to be the person who gets to, you know, be the boss.
Yeah, I think it's important to be able to kind of take the time out because, I mean, when you think of Whitesnake, I mean, of course, it's David Coverdale. And then when you think of, you know, playing with Cher, I mean, obviously that's Cher. So, I mean, and then, of course, even the Rock of Ages stuff that you do, I mean, you're playing other people's tracks. So, you know, what? How do you kind of switch mindsets between them?
A lot of hotel room prep. So, I mean, when it came to, you know, like 2017 through 2019 was really the pinnacle of me juggling all three of those, doing like Whitesnake and Cher and Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And I would say 2019 was the peak of that because David started to do more again, and Cher to put out an album and decided to go on the road rather than just do Las Vegas residencies. So it's like, oh, wow, she's going to be touring. And TSO was like, hey, let's do this extra thing. And this extra, so it was like, oh, my gosh, everything is like everybody's in let's do more mode. So it was like, oh, my gosh, this is, you know, it was a lot of pressure. So there was times where I remember being in South America with Whitesnake on tour and I was going to go to Europe to join Cher's tour I went straight from the stage in Colombia to the airport, literally in my stage clothes, and flew to Germany. And the next night I was playing with her in Germany, and joined her tour, and then got home and I was home for one day and I was in TSO rehearsals. So so during that time, like when I was in South America, I was running Cher's set in the hotel room and the TSO set because I needed to be ready for both. Because the Cher thing, I only hopped in there for like a week or two. So despite the fact I was in South America, I was spending like, you know, I'm in Buenos Aires. And I think the majority of the time I was in my hotel room running sets, running music in my hotel room.
Do you ever sit there and forget which one you're about to play on stage? You ever sit there and go, all right, what was this one again? This is Whitesnake.
It's just a lot of prep work, you know. You just have to do a lot of preparation. But that's what's gotten me ahead is that kind of stuff. Being the guy who's crazy enough to sit and like run through that much stuff on an off day, be like, hey, it's my day off, but I'm going to sit with my guitar for 4 hours today and run songs. So.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about that prep. I mean, I imagine that your whole tale has to be a tale of incredible perseverance because you didn't really emerge onto the national scene with Night Ranger until you were already in your mid-30s, you know. So can you tell us a little bit more about the journey to get to get where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, let's see, you know, Chicago suburbs, out of high school, a couple years of college doing classical guitar, went to GIT in Hollywood, so a year of guitar school, year working at a recording studio out there in Hollywood, so I'm 21, moved back to Chicago, taught a ton of students, like 70 students a week, and then supplemented that with playing gigs. So like, you know, I had my band and we'd play bars on the weekends, right? That kind of thing. And then that kind of built up to like the bigger bands in Chicago. And that eventually had me playing with this girl, Kathy Richardson, who she got this role as Janis Joplin in this show, Love Janis. And that took me to New York. And simultaneously in Chicago, I was also playing with Jim Peterick in his World Stage Band. Jim is the gentleman who co-founded the Ides of March and Survivor. And so he had these things called World Stage, and he'd have people come out and sing their hits on those every year, like once a year, right? I was in the house band, and that's what got me Night Ranger down the road, right? So through playing with Jim Peterick, that landed me with playing with Night Ranger. And being out here, coming to New York was through Love Janis, right? So I got that through Kathy, and these things just kind of built. And then that led to me doing the oldies scene, kind of doing Big Brother and the Holding Company. I was in the Turtles. And so like right about at that time when I was in the Turtles is when I got Night Ranger, right? I was doing like the Turtles and Scrap Metal and Jim Peterick's World Stage, all these things that were kind of like – you're right about to do something big. And then it was Night Ranger turned out to be the thing that kind of broke open for me. And Night Ranger, and then I got Rock of Ages through doing theater stuff here in New York. And through both of those, I got TSO and added that into the mix. And then from there, I'd say, you know, Whitesnake came along. And I'd say all those things led to Whitesnake, but probably mainly Night Ranger probably led to that. And then from there, getting Cher, that was David taking a break and me knowing that we weren't going to tour and looking to fill in. And I, my main contact there was Justin Derrico and Pink, you know. So I'd say that that contact probably came mainly from being in Whitesnake, being able to sub for and fill in the Cher gig. So all that stuff, yeah, it's there you go. That's kind of the as much as I can Reader's Digest it. It's like a ton of steps, yeah. Right? To get where you get. But I was playing, I began gigging full time, not teaching at 30 when I came to New York for that Love Janice. That was the break of me going like, all right, I'm not teaching anymore. I'm only a performer.
I was just thinking about the music video for Finish Line, which is, you know, incredibly cool. And I mean, it's this journey of somebody who's in a dark place and gets to a good place by the end in the video, you know? And how much of that was biographical was kind of what I was wondering.
What do they say in Hollywood? Based on a true story? Isn't that what they, yeah. So that's probably the most accurate statement I can make about that. I mean, I gave Wayne Joyner a loose idea of like a story idea for it and just went, I don't know, you know, like something like this. And like, this is what these lyrics kind of allude to, and this is what this means. And then he ran with it.
Is there anything like when you talk about having Russell Allen, of course, as the singer and Jeff as the background singer, what do they kind of bring to your arrangements, or do you keep it pretty much as you arranged it?
Well, I mean, I pretty much let everybody do what they want. That's my production style, as funny as that sounds, right? It's like, oh, I can't wait to produce. And then what do? I just tell people to do whatever they want. but I think that's really the best way. That's the way to get your best results out of people, right? Like people say, you know, oh, did you do this remotely? Like you just sent it to Vinny and let him, you know, dude, wouldn't you want to be in the room with him and tell him what you're thinking? It's like, yeah, there's times where like, I'm like, oh, I didn't picture him doing that. But at the same time, like, why not just roll with it? Right. If he did something that I didn't expect, that doesn't make it any better or worse. It's, you know, you just roll with what people do when they send you their parts. And that way everybody gets their playing and their character on it. And you get the best playing out of everybody by just staying out of their way. So that's the way I think you can get like their creativity involved, despite the fact that I'm writing everything. Right. So I'm writing the lyrics and the melodies and all this stuff. But at the same time, you know, people get motivated about the playing because it's like, yeah, I know this guy's not going to tell me what to play. So anyway, there you go. That's my thoughts on that. Did I answer your question even? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like what
really did.
Yeah. And what I'm also thinking is like, so you talk about writing the lyrics and that kind of thing. Like how much did you learn about writing lyrics from, say, Night Ranger or David Coverdale?
I mean, I've been writing from the time I was a kid, you know, so I just haven't written songs on albums that sold millions of copies. So, no, I mean, writing lyrics is like, everybody's got their own style with that, right? I mean, I don't think I write lyrics that sound like either one of those camps necessarily, like that sound like Night Ranger lyrics or David lyrics. So, I mean, do I even have love in the song title on the album? I don't think I do.
Nope.
And there's not a lot of sexual innuendo either. So, I mean, that's pretty much what Whitesnake has a lot of, right? So, yeah, I mean, I just, for me, it's like, I kind of write about life situations, right? And, at least these two albums, Dying to Live and Running Games, that's pretty much what they've been focused on. Just what, you know, what's on my mind kind of at the time.
Are you trying to tell me slip of the tongue can mean something else?
So then, you know, speaking of a little bit about Whitesnake, like we talked to Reb Beach late last year, and I mean, when you talk about, I know that the two of you are such different styles of guitarists. Like, what's it like working with a guy like Reb?
Reb is really a great player, obviously, great musician, great guy. You know, we really like playing rhythm together. You know, Reb's a really tight rhythm player, so we focus a lot on playing those riffs really tight together. And he's just a good dude. You know, we can cover each other a lot technically. Like, he's the first guy I've ever been on stage with where I'm like, let's do this tapping thing together, you know, and we can do it. So that's never happened in my life. So in that regard, he's a lot of fun to be able to match up and play some harmony stuff with. And he's a great background vocalist too. A lot of people don't know that. He has a really good voice, and he's just off stage. He's a really like witty guy. He's lots of laughs. You know, Michael Devin is really funny too. Hanging with those guys on the bus is like, you know, we pretty much laugh solid from the time we get on the bus till we get to the next destination.
What's it like then, you know, when you're out on tour? I mean, like, I went through your website and looking through your 2019, I mean, and just all the photos and stuff like that. Like, is it hard to keep going for that long?
No, not really. I mean, I think it would be if I was only doing one thing, right? But having that thing where I was bouncing back and forth between the camps, I get that anxiety about like, oh my God, I got to do this. Oh my God, I got to do this. Oh my God, I got to do this. And then that helps keep it fresh because it's like, I'm not just settling into like playing one set. I've done that with some stuff like the theater gigs I talked about with, doing Love Janice and doing Rock of Ages. Like, those were gigs where I play the same thing 8 shows a week for, I mean, I think Rock of Ages, I probably did 18 or 1900 performances. And that's without counting like rehearsals. So there's times where you're like, oh my God, I'm literally Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. Like, I've turned into that dude. I don't know how it happened. So I think that, yeah, that gets old, like where you're like, oh my gosh, like we're doing it again. And I'm not going to lie. Like, there's times where you're doing it where you're just like, you're just there because you're making a living doing it. And then, I mean, somehow you usually find some fun in it and have a decent time with it. But in general, when I'm going back and forth between a few things, no, I don't have that problem. It feels fun.
Yeah.
To playing that many shows at the Rock of Ages, did it kind of help prep you for the theatrical style that you needed to take on stage with Trans-Siberian Orchestra?
Well, it got me used to playing 8 shows a week. TSO is 8 shows a week as well. The only difference is you're actually traveling for it. So that is a typical TSO week is you play one show on Wednesday. Next city, you play one show on Thursday. Next city, you play 2 shows on Friday. Next city is 2 on Saturday. Next city is 2 on Sunday. And then you get Monday and Tuesday off, right? That's like a standard TSO week. So you've done 5 days of playing, but there's been the last 3 days of the week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, are all 2 shows. So you get to Sunday night, man, and it's not really the fact that you've done 2 shows, which is already a lot and difficult because those shows are about 2.5 hours. So you've been on stage for 5 hours, 3 days in a row. But it's that you do a sound check before, then you do a meet and greet after each of the evening shows, mm-hmm. and then a signing line for the arena that can be anywhere from, I'd say, 30 minutes to an hour, right? So by the time you're done, you're like, wow, we've been in this arena for 11 hours today. And now we're going to go to the bus and drive to the next city and do that again in another city. And then, so that's a hard tour to do. By the time you get done with the TSO tour, man, you're pretty much like, whoa, that was something, right? Then when you get to a normal band tour, it feels like, oh wow, we're like hardly working, you know? Cause, when you get used to doing TSO, but I mean, I love it. Honestly, I'm a sucker for it, man. I totally love it. It's one of those things that the harder you got to push yourself, the more you're like, come on, man, you can do this. Come on, let's go. You know, psych yourself up. It's like, I call it the Marines of Rock doing that TSO tour. It's like some kind of like insane tour boot camp that you go through every year. Right.
Now, Is there ever a point where you can see, you know, the Joel Hoekstra's 13 stuff being played on stage? I mean, of course, it would be very hard to get this band, but, like, could you picture going out on tour with it at some point?
We did one gig on the Monsters of Rock cruise in support of it.
Yeah.
And there's been some times where Russell has come and we've done, you know, some of the stuff in my acoustic set, or Jeff Scott Soto has joined me. So it's happened a little bit here and there where there's been some tiny bits of live support for it. One full band show, right? One full electric band show with Vinny Appice and Russell and Jeff Scott Soto. So a couple of the guys were different, right? I had my friend David Z instead of Tony Franklin, and Paul Taylor played keys and rhythm guitar instead of Derek Sherinian being in there. But you never know, man. I mean, I'm at this stage of the game, like, that's almost like assuming that there's going to be live shows again, which I don't want to do at this point. I don't want to, like, jinx us. So,
yeah, for sure.
What's the saying, right? When you assume you make you remember the old Benny Hill thing? When you assume you make an ass out of you and me?
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm trying to avoid that. And also I find it's better for my mindset if I just stay in the day in, like, terms of what I can do right now to be productive and move forward, rather than, like, be one of these, like, you know, I hope we can get back to touring and just sit around and do nothing with my life. I'm just not comfortable with that. Like, I need to be constantly moving forward and being busy. So, which I'm doing right now. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I know you're teaching. Of course, I just really want to quickly ask about what it was like to sit in with Jason Bieler and Jeff Scott Soto on one of their shows.
You mean the one in Vegas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really great. I mean, I love those guys, man. Jeff is an awesome dude, great friend of mine. He's the most overqualified background vocalist in the history of mankind.
Yes.
He's singing backgrounds on my album. You know, what does he call himself? The Baron, right?
Baron von Bielski. Yeah.
Yeah, Baron von Bielski. He's a badass, man. You know, he's a very talented cat. And obviously very, very witty guy and very fun to hang with. So, you know, having those guys as friends is a great thing.
And then the teaching, like, I know that you've been doing a lot of teaching, and I love the fact that you're doing all the videos and kind of doing the run throughs of the songs. Like, what, you know, what brought you to that, back to that? Well, I mean, obviously the pandemic brought you back to teaching, but the run throughs, where did those come from?
I've been with Guitar World for a while now. I forget even when we started this this monthly column in Guitar World. I've been in there on and off. You usually tape those all in one shot. So you go in like, hey, let's tape six lessons. And so that means you have a monthly column for 6 months, right? And they get released on YouTube as if you taped it the night before or whatever. But in reality, you taped like six of them in one day. So you can't even remember what you taught. And you're like, I hope I didn't make a fool of myself. And I hope this is a decent lesson. But yeah, that's pretty much the story there. Guitar World has been great. Absolutely great, man. Those guys have been so good to me, man. It's a great platform to be on in terms of visibility, to be able to teach for them. I mean, that Monster Pentatonic video I have out with them is, you know, got 850,000 views or something at this point in time. So that's fantastic, considering pretty much everybody that watches that's a guitar player. So that's kind of an amazing thing to think about. So that's been great. I obviously finished the record, the Echo Bats project with Tony Harnell. Getting that out there was fun. And, let's see, then I've been teaching privates, 30 people a week right now on Skype is what I do. And then I do, master classes with Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp and a couple other places as well, here and there. I've been doing cameos like crazy, man. Those personalized greetings, I do about, I'd say 12 to 15 of those a week on average.
Wow.
So that's been kind of crazy. And, like, you know, you play on there for people. So it's almost like you're doing like little mini shows at times. And sessions are always steady with me. I seem to have like about three or four sessions a week that I do play for people. I've been writing for the project with Nathan James and Michael Sweet. Writing with my friend Jim Peterick, obviously, and for the album he's producing. And man, just I'm just constantly going, like constantly going.
Do you turn anything down?
Only if I don't have time. If I don't have time, I don't do it. That's that.
Yeah, it seems, yeah, because, I mean, you know, it takes such a special kind of person, I think, to be able to like, you know, change hats so quickly and just to keep going. But I love your attitude as a whole on continuing to work and just continuing to try to better yourself.
Yeah, that's how you get better, man. You can't get better by just like sitting back and going, I hope someday we can get back out and tour. I mean, that's a little ridiculous. That's just like one small part of what being a, not a small part, but it's only one part of what being a musician is about. So, you know, I'm not going to like sit around and whine about that right now. I definitely miss it and want to get back to it really bad. But at the same time, like I'm not going to be a baby about it. Like, you know, let's keep working and moving forward. You never know where it's all going to take me.
I'm being a bit of a baby about it. I'll admit it. You know, why not? Somebody has a wine.
Yeah, and also just the fact that you get to meet all these new people, and I can imagine that just the, you know, just the connections that you're making on a daily basis are amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I find that work creates work. You know, if you're keeping busy and you're always moving and moving forward, that means you're interacting with people and you're just an active part of just being a musician, being productive every day. That's, I say it all the time, like every interview I ever do that, I'm like, that's my philosophy, is like, be productive every day. Do something that moved you forward every day. And so for me, that's incredibly difficult to wrap my head around the fact that some people are sitting around for like a year and a half being like, yeah, I just kind of laid low and, you know, someday we'll be back to touring. It's like, what? You mean you took a year and a half out of your life and just burned it? Like, no way, man. No way. Not a chance. I mean, the only way I know that I got here is by clawing, scratching and clawing, man. So, I mean, you heard my path there. I mean, it's a lengthy one of like all these steps to be able to be, you know, get to where I am today. So I'm not going to stop right now just because I can't be like out on tour, so to speak. So
you're suggesting then that like binge watching 300 television series in a year and a half is not a good thing.
Hey, look, if that's on your list of how you move forward, something you want to do.
Right. I mean, like, look, if that's what makes people happy, I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying, like, what makes me happy is feeling like I'm still moving forward. I can't like let myself just go like it's all over. I'm going to like fall apart. Like if I just go like, that's it, you know, like this is going on. I guess that's it. It's been a nice run. Like I just, you know, I just can't do it. So I'm just going to keep pushing and going forward. And then hopefully I can look back at this time as like, I don't regret it and don't go like, boy, I could have done some cool things, you know. I feel like I've gotten a lot of cool things done in this time. The quarantine videos, you know, doing Jane with Mike Portnoy and Dino Jalusic, and doing Stormbringer with Dino and Virgil Donati. And let's see, I did Jen Majura's jam with Nico McBrain and Jen. And I've been a part of a Shred compilation or two. So there's been a lot of stuff that's come out of the year, man.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the next thing you need to do is be a motivational speaker. Yes. I'm telling you, you have inspired me.
That's right. We're ready to go out and do everything else now too. But, Joel, I know we're out of time. So, really quickly tell the fans, where they can keep up with you.
Just head over to my website. I have kind of a difficult name, JoelHoekstra, joelhoekstra.com. And you can link over to all my social media stuff from there. David Coverdale calls it my Encyclopedia Britannica. So there's more information on me there than you'll ever care to read or know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Running Games is out February 12th. It's an awesome album. Joel Hoekstra, you're an amazing guest. And we wish you nothing but the best in the future and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks so much. Thanks for your time, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye now. Bye-bye.